Good morning. 9 minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. Well, back when I was a senior in high school, and I'm not saying when that was, the debate topic revolved around whether or not states acting individually or the federal government acting for all states together was the best way to handle environmental issues. Now it seems as though that debate is happening again on a different platform. My guest this hour is State Representative Spencer Black, a Democrat from Madison who is co-author of the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act, currently in the Assembly Natural Resources Committee. You can join our conversation toll-free at 800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, call us at 263-1890. On the Internet, we're at talk@wpr.org. Representative Black, good morning, and thank you for spending the hour with us.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Tell us about the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act. What would it do?
The Wisconsin Safe Climate Act would, in its essence, reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases, those gases that are causing global warming, by 25% by the year 2020.
How would we achieve that?
Well, we would achieve it in a number of ways. There's no one solution, but it would include investing in energy efficiency and renewable energy, and also in cleaning up some of the major sources of carbon dioxide emissions we now have.
Wisconsin would be one of two states to have such legislation if it passes. Which is the other state?
Well, that's actually not true. We would be. This bill is modeled on the California law, which is the strongest law, and California was the first state. But since then, many other states have begun taking steps to take action on global warming and reducing carbon dioxide emissions. So Wisconsin certainly wouldn't be going alone. For example, 13 states have adopted strict standards on tailpipe emissions from motor vehicles on CO2. Northeastern states have joined together to begin dealing with this problem. So we would be, along with many states, working on this. However, we would be the second state to adopt the law that was adopted in California, which is the strongest and most comprehensive in the nation and one of the strongest in the world.
I guess if you heard what I said at the top of the program, you can probably anticipate my next question. Why are the states having to do this? In the past, environmental regulation has come from the federal government and has covered all 50 states.
States have to do it because the federal government isn't. I did hear your comments at the beginning of the hour, and you're right, that's been a long-term debate. But in this case, I don't think there's any debate. Everybody who's been involved in this would agree it would be far better if the federal government were to take strong action on this. That's the logical level of government, both because it would affect all 50 states and because this is not just a national, it's an international, it's a global problem by definition, and the federal government is the most logical level of government to deal with foreign governments, as we witnessed just in the discussions about this at the G8. Unfortunately, we've had virtually a total lack of leadership at the federal government, although there has been at least a slight reversal in the rhetoric from the Bush administration in the last couple of weeks, which is welcome. So states have to step up because of the potential impacts of this problem of global warming and the climate disruption that would result are so great. States are stepping up to the plate because the federal government is not. And part of our hope is not just to have the states take positive action, but also to prod the federal government to action. And there's been other examples of this, John. For example, back when I was first in the legislature in the 80s, the federal government was refusing to deal with the problem of acid rain. So Wisconsin and a number of other states, similar to what's happening now, passed strong acid rain laws, which were implemented, which began to work, and that prodded the federal government to adopt a strong standard some years later. So we're hoping here that the state action will not only begin to and there's good reasons for Wisconsin to begin to deal with this problem now, but also help prod the federal government, which is the logical level of government, to take action.
Now, carbon dioxide emissions and various greenhouse gases are no respecter of state boundaries. So if Wisconsin enacts this legislation and states surrounding us do not, what are we accomplishing?
Well, we wouldn't accomplish much if we did it in isolation. Wisconsin is about 2% of the national emission of greenhouse gases. However, we are working with other states. Other states are taking action. In fact, when we announced this legislation, we had worked with legislators in all the surrounding Great Lakes states to introduce and push similar legislation in their states. So it is a nationwide effort. Because, as I say, states are stepping up to the plate because the federal government is not. But it's our hope that Wisconsin, following California, following many other states, will essentially substitute for the lack of action at the federal level until we can reverse that.
We're going to take a break and check the weather around the state of Wisconsin, and then we'll come back and have more of our conversation with Representative Spencer Black of Madison about the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act. What do you think? The phone lines are open right now for you to call. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, call us at 263-1890. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 after 6. Good morning. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. Well, after 9 o'clock this morning, Kathleen Dunn will be along, and you can get a recap of all the major political headlines from last week with Kathleen Dunn and her guests. This hour, we're talking about climate change and what the state of Wisconsin can do about it. Our guest is Spencer Black, Democratic State Representative from Madison, who is co-author of the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act. Wisconsin would be among a number of other states taking individual state action about climate change in the absence of any sort of definitive federal action. And we've got Representative Black with us to talk about this legislation, and we invite you to call us as well and share your opinions. What do you think about the state of Wisconsin taking its own action on climate change? 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. Good anywhere you can hear this broadcast. If you're in Madison, use our local number and save us a buck or two. Call 263-1890. You can also reach us on the internet. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Well, Representative Black, the bill that you have proposed in the Assembly is going to the Assembly Natural Resources Committee, which is a committee that you're the ranking minority member on. What are its chances in the Assembly?
Well, the chances in the Assembly, which are controlled by Republicans currently, are uncertain. But we also have introduced similar legislation in the state Senate. My co-author in the Senate is Senator Mark Miller, who is also, fortunately, the chair of the Environment Committee in the Senate, and he has plans for a hearing and action on the bill in late summer once the budget is resolved. And we're hopeful that the bill will move quickly through the Senate. But we also think that the Assembly, while some of the reluctant Republican leaders have been reluctant to deal with this, will come around. And the reason is because of the strong public support. What we've been doing is building a very strong coalition across the state to support this legislation. It includes not only environmental groups and sportsmen's groups, as you might imagine, but also faith, health, farm, civic student groups, and there's a tremendous public support. The public gets us, and there's tremendous public support for this, and I think that public support is being translated to legislators, and that will force the Assembly to act. In fact, public radio not that long ago did one of your periodic polls on this topic, and there was overwhelming support. Almost 80% of the population, and more than that if you exclude those who didn't have an opinion, who supported strong action to deal with greenhouse emissions and the global warming problem. So there's tremendous public support. The public is learning about this because the papers are full of information. Scientific reports are becoming more and more definitive. So I think that while we'll have success in the Senate, which is democratically controlled, but also in the Republican-controlled Assembly, I think that we are going to also have success because of public pressure.
It's no secret, of course, that the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, as a group, is opposed to this legislation. Do you think there's enough public sentiment to overcome the lobbying of groups that would not like to see Wisconsin move forward on this?
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. That you're right. WMC, which is the big business lobby, almost with a knee-jerk reflex, has opposed this legislation, which is unfortunate because we do have many business groups which have realized that in the long run, our sustainable economy is best for business, that we are really running a risk by ignoring this problem and exacerbating this problem. Well, the big business lobby group itself, the organization, may be opposed to this. Many business groups are for it and are looking beyond just the immediate. In fact, in California, where they passed the legislation, their biggest utility was strong advocates for it. And I think there's strong economic reasons why Wisconsin should take steps earlier. Eventually, there will be national and international standards and regulations, probably a tax on carbon, because the problem will grow so large. The problem is the longer we procrastinate, there's a tax on procrastination when it comes to dealing with climate change. And the longer we wait, the harder it's going to be, because the climate, just like a battleship, you don't turn it on a dime. But Wisconsin has strong reasons to invest in the measures that would reduce carbon dioxide emissions, like energy efficiency and renewable energy. Right now, Wisconsin spends over $10 billion a year straight out of our economy to other states and other nations importing fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas. That's a tremendous strain on our state economy, a tremendous loss of jobs. That's money right out of the economy before it ever circulates and creates jobs. If we can keep that money, more of that money, in the state through renewable energy, through labor-intensive investments in energy efficiency, through developing, the businesses that create clean technology, then we're going to be well-positioned for the economy of the future. In the future, even if the federal there are going to be changes at the federal level, I think, with the next elections, the international pressure, as we saw at the G8 meeting, is already forcing George Bush to at least make rhetorical changes in what he says about global warming. There is going to be the pressure, and the longer we wait, the harder it is going to be to change, and the more expensive it's going to be to change. So there's a good reason for Wisconsin to be ahead of the curve. Obviously, strong environmental reasons, but also, I think, very strong economic reasons.
We have a caller waiting to join us, and let's bring him into the conversation. Basima from Milwaukee, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for calling me a guy.
Sorry.
No problem. I just wanted to say I think it's great that they put this legislation through. What can we do as citizens, not only in Milwaukee, but of our country, to push the federal government and to support this bill?
Well, thanks for the question and the call. The answer is, first of all, contact your legislators, both at the federal and state levels, and let them know how you feel. Let them know that this is important, because I think, as there often is this disconnect between what's happening with the politicians and what the public is feeling. So we have to let the folks in office know how the public feels, and that's the first step. But also, I would say, if you're very interested, become involved in some of the many organizations that are that are educating the public about this.
Cool. All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. And I would, add to that that if anybody is sending letters to their members of Congress, that they should be sending them both to their offices in Washington and whatever home office they have. And that regards any issue you might be sending a letter to your member of Congress on. It's always important to get a copy in each office to make sure somebody sees it. Well, Representative Black, I'll take a little bit of a side spin on that last question. What can we do as individuals to have an impact on climate change?
Well, I think that it's going to be, you know, whatever decision we have will be, and politicians hate to say this, will not be easy. I don't think it's not overwhelmingly difficult, but it will require some changes. We certainly, in Wisconsin, we can invest, from a strictly economic point of view, we can invest a lot more in energy efficiency. And we also can have a more efficient transportation system. We can also support, as I do, for example, at my house through my utility, the purchase of renewable energy, wind energy, solar energy, to some extent biologically derived energy, to power our needs. But the, you know, alternative energy sources are important, and they're going to be a big part of the solution. But before you produce energy, what we have to do is use energy to be far more efficient. You know, as a society, we're in the United States, we use about twice as much energy per capita per person as other industrialized nations. About five times more than the world as a whole. But even comparing us to other nations with similar lifestyles and standards of living, we use about twice as much. So people individually can think of ways that they can cut their energy consumption, because our energy needs, which are supplied by the primarily by the burning of fossil fuels, creates the carbon dioxide, which is the level of which has increased dramatically in the world, about 35% since the onset of the industrial age, and that's what the major gas that is trapping the heat and causing the greenhouse effect, which is heating up the climate and will result in fairly dramatic climate changes, some of which we're just beginning to see, but many of which will become more obvious as the years go on.
The you mentioned earlier that in the world, this is not necessarily as big an issue for debate as it is here in the United States. And I noted that the leader of Germany, Chancellor Merkel, who is said to be very conservative, was pushing the United States on climate change.
Oh, yeah. You know, there was this G8 meeting, which is the eight leaders of the eight major economic powers get together. And there was this meeting recently in Rostov, Germany. And one of the top items on the agenda was global warming. And the Germans, and as you mentioned, the Prime Minister of Germany is from the conservative side of their political spectrum, but she has been pushing this very hard, and all the other European nations were as well. It was, and I think that George Bush, who made some comments finally recognizing that there is global warming, human-caused global warming, we have to do something about it, was in reaction to the fact that he was going to this meeting where much of the world is very unhappy with the United States not taking action on this. European countries have been very active in trying to cut their emissions, very aggressive, and they plan to be even more so in the future.
And gasoline has also been a lot more expensive in Europe than it has been in the United States for a number of years.
Well, they've long had a policy because of trying to discourage excessive gasoline use. They have better, obviously, their communities are designed, so there's less need for long driving. They do have generally more efficient vehicles, better mass transit, and better alternatives. You know, you go to a place like Denmark, where Copenhagen, where which is also a cool country, but about half the commutes within the city are done by bicycle. Here in the United States, it's a fraction.
I'd have a tough time commuting by bicycle myself. We're talking about climate change and what the state of Wisconsin might be able to do about it. And our guest, Representative Spencer Black from Madison, has introduced legislation called the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act. We'd like to know what you think. Give us a call here this morning and give us your opinion on whether you think Wisconsin ought to be doing this or not. The number to call toll-free anywhere is 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890 or talk at WPR.org. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking about climate change and what the state of Wisconsin might do or might not do about it, depending on what the legislature ultimately decides. The two bills have been introduced, one in the Senate, one in the Assembly, and we're talking about the Assembly version this hour, Assembly Bill 157, which is the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act, and co-authored by Representative Spencer Black, who is from Madison, and he's a Democrat. He's joining us by phone, and we'd like to hear from you by phone as well at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's toll-free anywhere you can hear the sound of my voice. And in Madison, please give us a call at our local 9-263-1890. You can also send us an email to talk at WPR.org. Well, Representative Black, I want to get into some of the details in this bill and how it would be carried out. According to the analysis by the Legislative Reference Bureau, which is what I'm reading from here, the bill requires the Department of Natural Resources to determine the level of greenhouse gas emissions in this state in 1990, including emissions from the generation of all electricity used in the state, and to set a statewide greenhouse gas emission limit for 2020 that is equivalent to the 1990 level. Why 1990?
Well, 1990 is the level that's been used internationally as a benchmark. Wisconsin's emissions of greenhouse gases have been increasing about 2.5% a year, faster than the national average, incidentally, of about 2%. So that our emissions have increased by about 25% since 1990. And this bill would, as a first step, and it is just a first step, would return us to the 1990 levels, about a 25% reduction, which is consistent with what's being done internationally by 2020. And then we will have to take, as the world will, more actions after that to start reducing. But the important thing is to stabilize, as a first step, at 1990 levels. And while it won't be easy, it's very achievable. And can be done, I think, not only without harm to the economy, but with long-term gain to the economy.
And it also, I was reading, when you say including emissions from the generation of all electricity used in this state, a lot of some of the electricity that is used in this state is generated elsewhere, including up in Canada.
Yes, well, the Canadian electricity is generally generated using hydropower, which does not contribute to global warming. But it would include, we are part of a regional grid, and it would include that. And that's why it's important, as has been done elsewhere, to work with our neighbors to have a regional approach, short of having a national approach, to begin addressing this problem. It's one of those problems which, by its very nature, is global in scope. And what we do here is helpful, but we also need to do it in conjunction with other states. And that's why we're working with legislators in other states to pass similar legislation.
Let's go back to the phones, and next we'll talk to Jay in Vilas County. Jay, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Representative Black.
Good morning.
I'm a Vilas County Board Supervisor, and I serve on the Land and Water Conservation Committee and also officially act for Vilas County as a land use representative. And we're extremely interested in moving forward with some significant alternative energy programs, particularly in the biomass area. As you're aware, we're heavily forested up here and have a great deal of biomass available to us. And as you look at the result of the production of the growth of trees, you find that we are producing more trees than we are using by about a margin of 3-1. As a result of that and all the state and federal land available to us up here that, if properly managed, would produce a huge grid of biomass, we're looking forward to being able to try to do something significant and meaningful in those areas. How does your bill address that?
Well, the bill sets an enforceable goal of a 25% reduction, and it sets the procedures for doing that. Part of a solution would be using biological fuels. In the long run, we knew most of the biological fuels made now are made from corn, and that's probably logically going to be part of the mix. We're going to move towards, especially as the research bears fruit, towards cellulosic ethanol production and cellulosic energy production, which uses a variety, everything from perennial grasses like switchgrass to wood waste from forest production. And those cellulosic sources can be part of the mix that will solve the problem. No one strategy is going to solve this problem. It's going to be a mix of strategies. But part of it can be biological fuels and cellulosic, which is production of ethanol, some cellulosic sources, including forestry sources, can be part of the solution.
Has it not been true that they have found that the ethanol production from corn is actually harder on the land and takes more petroleum product to produce the ethanol than the value of the ethanol they're getting?
Actually, that's not true. The net energy balance, as it's called, in other words, how much energy do you put in, how much you get out, is positive. You do get about, depending on the estimates, any place from 25 to 50% more energy out from corn-based ethanol than you put in. There was a time before, especially efficiencies in the fermentation process, where it probably did take more energy than you got. Now there is a positive balance, but it's definitely not as strong as it perhaps it could be as more efficiencies are introduced, and definitely not as strong as when you use feedstocks that are not as energy intensive. One of the things that is being looked at very much is perennial grasses like switchgrass, because you don't have to put very much energy into them to grow them. Corn is an energy-intensive crop, and therefore the net energy balance, that is, the energy you get out, the gain in energy you do by going through the process, is much higher. There's a lot of scientific research going on to develop the enzymes that will efficiently take cellulosic sources like wood waste, like perennial grasses, like switchgrass, and be able to efficiently convert them into ethanol.
The topic is global warming or climate change, depending on what you want to call it, and we're talking with Representative Spencer Black. He's the ranking member of the Assembly Natural Resources Committee, which is where this bill is going next in the Assembly and in the Senate. A similar bill, a companion bill, is also moving forward and probably will have a little easier time getting through the Senate than in the Assembly. We're wondering if you have anything to add to our discussion about climate change and what the state of Wisconsin can do about it. What can you do about it as an individual? Maybe you have an idea. Maybe you've done some things in your household already to reduce your contribution to greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. I guess if the Chinese proverb is true that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step or something like that, perhaps there's something you can do and I can do as individuals that will make a difference ultimately if our collective actions are combined. We're wondering what you think about it, and we're giving you a chance to let us know. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear the sound of my voice. 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And if you're here in the Madison area and you want to call us, you can use this number, 263-1890, 263-1890. What do you think? Climate change? Can Wisconsin make a difference? Give us your answer. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 6:46 on this Monday morning. Coming up after 11 o'clock this morning, well, if shin splints or tennis elbow is bothering you, relief is at hand. After 11, Larry Mueller talks physical therapy with his UW-Madison guests, Lori Thine Brody and Associate Professor Bill Boissonneau. Shin splints, tennis elbow. I avoid both of those by refusing to partake in anything remotely physical. We're talking about climate change this hour, and our guest is Spencer Black, who is a member of the Wisconsin State Assembly from Madison. He's a Democrat. He's the ranking member of the Assembly, a ranking minority member of the Assembly Natural Resources Committee. And we're talking about the Wisconsin Safe Climate Act, Assembly Bill 157 this morning. And I'll give you the phone numbers one more time. There's still a line open for you, 800-642-1234 in Madison. It's 263-1890. We're also on the Internet at talk@wpr.org. And now the phones are starting to light up, so let's go back to them. And Mike in Castle Rock, you've been holding for a while. Good morning.
Good morning. Wisconsin built itself as a dairy state, and as a result, we produce a lot of methane. Has there been any discussion about methane?
Well, methane is one of the greenhouse gases, although it's a smaller contributor than by a long shot than carbon dioxide. In fact, methane production worldwide has basically leveled off. And the thing about methane is, while it does trap gases, it's fairly short-lived in the atmosphere, different than carbon dioxide. So methane is part of a contributor to global warming, but in the context, it's a relatively small part of it. Carbon dioxide is far and away the major driver of human-caused global warming. Interestingly enough, one of the things that concerns those of us in Wisconsin is that global warming will have some dramatic effects in Wisconsin, including on dairying. Just last week, the president of the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association issued a press release talking about the potential impacts of global warming on the dairy industry, and they're concerned that it will have a very negative effect on dairying for another number of reasons, with increased heat, increase in changes in the harmful pests that would come with warmer energy, increased energy demands, and the consequent costs to the business because of that. So the dairymen are very concerned about the impact on the dairy industry, and that's just one of the many impacts on Wisconsin that we would see if, as we see the climate change, as we see temperatures rise, agriculture in general, but especially dairying, will be negatively affected.
Well, we're when people think about climate change, generally, I think most of us think about global warming and the ice caps, the polar ice caps melting, and the coastlines of various countries being placed underwater and so forth. But there are a lot of other effects that we maybe don't think of generally. I know that one of the things that they're concerned about in northern Wisconsin is that some species of trees, which have grown in the state for a long time, really don't do very well here anymore because the climate is too warm.
That's right. Wisconsin, you know, you're right, John, that some of the most dramatic impacts, for example, the glaciers melting, the permafrost melting in Alaska, which is already playing havoc with their infrastructure, are more dramatic as you get to the poles. And some specific climatic reasons why the impact of global warming is greater at the poles than it is in the tropics. But we are going to see some major impacts in Wisconsin. I think it's worth talking about. We touched upon dairying and agriculture, but also forestry will be much affected. We're already beginning to see some change in tree species, but forest types will likely cause the northernmost forests we have of spruce and hemlock and fir to shrink, and other types of more southern forest species to move northward. So we would see a loss of some of our more northern-type forests, much of which the Northwoods, which much of us love and is a very special part of Wisconsin. We will also see probably the most dramatic effects in Wisconsin will be changes in water. The increased heat will increase evaporation. Projected is some fairly dramatic levels falling of the Great Lakes, but also decreases in lake levels throughout Wisconsin, drying up of wetlands, and that's going to have some major impacts on our fisheries as the both effect on water quantity as it decreases, but also temperature, major effects especially on our cold water fishery like trout, and also on our lakes and wetlands. So we can see some fairly dramatic effects. Many of the things that we love about Wisconsin that makes Wisconsin special are going to change, and change in a way that's not going to please us for the most part if we continue to allow this trend of increasing temperature and the effect on the climate to go forward.
Let's talk next to Peg in Rice Lake. Peg, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, I'm sure glad you're having this program. I thought I saw climate changes slight and subtle for 30 years, and by now, of course, it's getting pretty clear. I'm wondering if people are sitting inside their climate-controlled houses and just aren't looking. And also, I read recently that those effects may show up most in the winter and at night. And I think in the winter in particular is what I've noticed. We have warmer winters, but our summers haven't been notably hotter. And that might throw people off. Does the representative know anything about that?
We have had warmer winters. We have a pretty good record in Wisconsin because people have been keeping track of ice on and ice off on the lakes, a number of lakes around the state, ever since the 1850s. In my community of Madison, where we have a number of lakes, the average time of ice on the lakes has decreased fairly dramatically, I think by an average of about 39 days a year. Other lakes, including in northern Wisconsin, northwestern Wisconsin, have also kept some very good lakes. So we've seen that effect, although a little less dramatic, in other lakes around the state. So we have seen over the last 150 years that the amount of time that ice lakes are covered by ice has decreased pretty substantially in Wisconsin. That's probably one of the first signs we have had over the years of the warming of the climate. We have had gradual warming of the climate over the last century, but it's gotten much more dramatic. The pace has increased over the last three decades.
Well, and when the ice isn't covering the lakes, that water is much more subject to evaporation. We've lost 18 inches off of Lake Superior when you consider that that's Lake Superior represents about, what, 10% of the world's fresh water supply? That's a lot of water gone.
That's probably going to be one of the most noticeable results. As temperature warms, we're going to have increased evaporation and transpiration, and we are going to see falling of lake levels. Of course, the Great Lakes are going to be probably the first sign. We're probably already seeing that. But also inland lakes and wetlands are also going to lose water.
Let's try and get some more callers in here before we conclude this topic. We'll go next to Kelly in Mercer. Kelly, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering if the state itself is going to start building more green buildings. I think there's a perfect opportunity for a high-profile building in state parks and forests. The buildings currently that are being built for, like, offices and stuff don't have solar energy or anything like that. Is that something that the state's going to address?
I hope so. I've been pushing. I was on the building commission for a couple of years. I asked if almost about every building is what's the energy use of this building. There has been some improvement. The governor actually has issued an executive order pushing for more energy-efficient buildings and use of renewable sources. One of the most important things in that regard is last year we were successful getting a law passed that would require all, within the next 10 years, that all electricity in Wisconsin, at least 10%, come from renewable sources. But most directly to your question, that 20% of all the energy used by state agencies, including our state parks, would come from renewable energy. And I think with the new energy bill, we will already start seeing more investment by the state in the state facilities in both energy efficiency and renewable energy. It's important, I think, for governments, including the state, to lead by example, not just to require others to conserve and use renewable energy, but to lead by example. That's why in working on that bill last year that passed, I wanted to make sure that the state requirement was at least twice what it was for the general public.
Let's go next to Bill and Ettrick. Bill, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, my topic is about this is the last, but is there any government programs regarding solar energy in residential homes? Like, does the government pay the cost you install solar panels on your house?
We're having trouble hearing you. Your cell phone's cutting in and out. I think the question regards, are there going to be subsidies for people who want to install solar energy into their homes?
Yes, there are some programs. Part of the energy bill that passed last year, we used to have a lot more incentives, especially from the federal level, but there are some incentives. The Focus on Energy program is, and you can look that up on the web or call them, can tell you exactly what incentives they have depending on the application, but there are some incentives for the installation of solar energy and renewable energy sources in our state.
What about the DNR would be the state agency charged with administering this bill. What kind of enforcement measures would they be able to use to bring us into compliance?
Well, we've since carbon dioxide emissions are an air pollutant, we've drafted this bill to come under our air pollution statutes, and they would have the same authority and that they have now to enforce our other air pollution standards.
And there would also be some market incentives as well.
Yes. In other words, one of the things this bill would set caps or requirements for the major sources of carbon dioxide, but they would be able to trade those so that we could do it, and because carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is, if we produce it here or someplace else, is essentially has the same impact. They could trade and have, and there is already beginning a market for carbon dioxide reductions on the Chicago Board of Trade. And many farm groups are starting to look at that because depending on how you manage your farm, you can absorb some of the carbon dioxide, be a carbon dioxide sink. It's a potential for agricultural groups to benefit by enhancing their absorption of carbon dioxide, and that is one of the things that will be tradable on the Chicago Exchange. So the aim of this bill is to make these reductions, but do it in a market-based, cost-efficient manner. And so in some of these cases where it's too expensive for a particular facility to reduce carbon dioxide, they will be able to trade with a facility or other ways to reduce carbon dioxide that might be more cost-efficient.
Well, we're about out of time. Thank you, Representative Black, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for giving me the chance to talk about this. I appreciate that.
Christina Taylor produced this hour and answered the phones. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.